Hey everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Mini Wave, a podcast by Haverford Public Radio. My name is Courtney Link, and I'll be your host. Today, we are joined by a student in Laura Bean's Neurobiology of Sexual Behavior class, Jesse Friedson. Thank you for joining us today, Jesse.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So, in our culture and politics these days, there's a lot of talk about differences between males and females.
Right. But so much of that conversation has been focused on physical differences like muscle mass or hair growth.
Yeah, or on behavioral differences like girls preferring pink and boys preferring blue, for example.
Exactly. Now, some of those differences are clearly tied to stereotyping and socialization, but other elements of behavior, especially sexual behavior, may be tied to actual structural differences within female and male brains.
Ooh, that's pretty interesting. What are we talking about here?
Well, a prime example is the structure known as the sexually dimorphic nucleus of the preoptic area. It's a long name, but it's called the SDNPOA for short. So in male rodents, for example, it's linked to sexual desire and partner preference. But before I get into all this, let's just back up and talk about what's called the organizational hypothesis.
Organization like organizing clothing and textbooks type organizing?
Well, sort of, yeah, in spirit. Let's say you're building a bookshelf with different sections labeled things like science fiction, fantasy, nonfiction, and all the sections have only one book to start with.
That sounds like a lot of empty space to me.
Yeah, at first. But imagine when you were building your bookshelf, you knew that you were going to get a bunch of science fiction books for your birthday.
Oh, yeah.
You'd probably make the science fiction section a little bigger than the others, right?
Naturally, of course.
So organization of the brain is sort of like building a custom bookshelf that you haven't filled yet, but based on which books your body thinks it's going to get.
How does the body know which books it's going to get?
Well, studies indicate it's likely based on the testosterone you're exposed to right before and around the time of birth.
Okay, I'm confused. How did we go from books to brains?
Good question. So the organizational hypothesis is the idea that based on the amount of testosterone exposure around someone's time of birth, a person's brain is set up, in a sense, to operate in specific ways later on. For example, during puberty. This is called being activated.
So puberty is when you're adding more books to the pre-built bookshelf, or in sciencey terms, activating the already organized brain. Got it. So how do scientists know all this exactly?
Through a whole bunch of studies. Can I give you a few examples?
Sure, go ahead.
So the SDNPOA is about 5 times larger in males than females, give or take. Now, one study injected female rats with testosterone before they were born, just to see what would happen. And they found that during puberty, the female rats had SDNPOAs that were as big as males.
Does that mean if you inject testosterone, your brain changes to be like males?
Not 100%, because these same scientists also decided to try waiting to inject the testosterone until later, during puberty.
And what happened?
Well, the SDNPOA looked exactly like a normal female's.
So what does that mean then?
It means that there's something about hormonal exposure around the time of birth that can't be replicated after the fact.
Okay, all right. Hit me with another example.
Sure. So there are these birds called zebra finches.
Oh, I've heard of those. Those are the ones that sing, right?
Yes, but only the males.
Huh. Okay.
So scientists tried injecting female zebra finches with testosterone to see if it would make them sing.
And did they?
Nope. Because female zebra finches' brains don't have the brain mechanisms for song production that males do.
Okay, I think I understand now. Basically, scientists believe that the brain is organized at birth based on testosterone exposure so that males and females are capable of acting in specific ways later on in life.
Exactly. But unfortunately, it's about to get a little more complicated.
Oh gosh, what do you mean?
Well, a recent study by Wieringa et al. Found that puberty in humans may actually be a second organizational period.
What? But didn't you just say injections with testosterone during puberty didn't do anything?
Yep. But Wieringa et al. Found that in a brain region called the pallidum, human males experienced substantial changes in size that were related specifically to the onset of puberty.
Wow, that's a pretty incredible finding. Has anyone else been able to find something like that?
In other species, yes. For example, Delorme et al. Found that testosterone deprivation in hamsters during puberty led to changes in the volume of the amygdala that couldn't be reversed, regardless of testosterone levels in adulthood.
Wow. Okay. So what you're saying is that based on testosterone exposure around the time of birth, our brains are set up to be able to act in certain ways later on in life, but also that our brain changes again during puberty, depending on which hormones we do or don't receive.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay. So for all of us who aren't neuroscientists, why exactly is this important?
I'm glad you asked. Well, at the bare minimum, all of these findings really complicate our understanding of sex differences in humans and what is and isn't changeable.
Right, like people act as if males and females are born different with no nuance or ability to change.
Yeah, but this opens up all sorts of questions. For example, what happens if a female baby is exposed to extra testosterone in utero? How much testosterone would it take to affect the size of her brain structures?
And what would the behavioral effect be if that did happen?
Exactly. Or for transgender people, for example, this opens up all kinds of questions about whether puberty blockers or hormones at a young age can actually change the size of structures in the brain. Structures that we know have tangible effects on things like sexual behavior.
Wow, so basically, what you're saying is we sort of know a lot, but we also know nothing.
Yep, that tends to be how science works. The reality is, our brains are so much more complex than we think. But the good news is that we are always learning more and more.
Thank you for joining us on our first ever episode of Mini Wave. This podcast was brought to you by the Haverford Public Radio Station. It was produced by Jesse Friedson, written by Jesse Friedson, fact-checked by Jesse Friedson, and graded by Laura Bean. I'm your host, Courtney Link. Tune in again with us next week for another great episode of Mini Wave.